This is the Motion Martial Arts Podcast. In this episode, we discuss training at home. Thanks for listening.
What's up, everybody?
Yeah, so today we are going to talk about something that's pretty much the reality for just about all of us right now during this coronavirus COVID-19 outbreak, which is how to train at home.
Yep. Talk a little bit about the kind of stuff that I've been doing and kind of things that are available for everybody to practice.
You know? Yeah, so I do think just as a big sort of, I guess, something to get out of the way right now, I do think it's significantly easier to train as a striker by yourself than it is as a grappler.
Absolutely.
But there are still things that can be done.
Yeah. Well, I mean, and you know, so what I've been doing is, of course, a lot of that, like, you can practice striking. It's not the same when you don't have pads to hit. And when you're coming from a karate background, this is actually something that's very, very, a very, very big part of karate training is like just solo, like, movement drills. Kata, of course, you know, it's like sequences of movements that you just practice. And then they also, Japanese term is kihon, which means basics, which is just doing, you know, punches and kicks in the air with it a lot. And that's the kind of training that I, of course, grew up doing a lot of, but I've kind of moved away from it in my development in recent years. And I've started to like spend more time hitting pads. Like, I use like a very small portion of my training is just solo movement stuff. But it's interesting how a situation like this, when, you know, this kind of limited pad work that I'm able to do, that makes you kind of appreciate having those sequences of movements to practice. But I mean, what's something everybody can do is still go for a run in the morning. You can lift some weights, you can do calisthenics, bodyweight exercises, you know.
I mean, obviously I have no medical background.
Yeah.
I'm of the opinion that going for a run is not a good idea.
Yeah.
And that's just based off, if this thing is supposedly as easy to get as they're making it out to be, then
yeah.
How is it safe for us to go for a run? I don't really know, but what do I know? You know,
depends where you live.
For sure.
If you're in a very, you know, densely populated area, then yeah, you know, it might be very hard to avoid any kind of. I guess, you know, they say, what, even if you're in 6 feet of someone,
six feet,
you know, it's
and that's supposedly possible. It lingers in the air, you know, so somebody could have just ran past that same area as you.
There's so much kind of contradictory information going around with that kind of stuff, though, because it's like it lingers in the air, and then I would assume it eventually comes at rest on the ground or whatever surface is under it, right? Like, that's what I would assume, right? And they're saying that it can last for a pretty long time too on surfaces, like, you know, like, it can't, and it depends on the type of surface. It can range from a couple of days to a couple of weeks.
Yeah, so my understanding is that the outside of this virus has a fatty cell, which is why soap and hot water is so effective, because it cuts down the outer layer of the fatty cell of this virus, so then it dies,
mm-hmm.
because the fatty cell is what's protecting it. So what that means as far as it gets warmer or hotter, I have no idea. I have no medical background, but that's what I've read. So, I mean, I personally think my advice is to keep it inside as much as possible right now. And then hopefully by all of us keeping it and staying inside, we can all get back to some semblance of normalcy sooner.
At some point, yeah. Well, you know, it's something that I've been reading up on a little bit, and I have no medical background either, so everybody take everything I say with a gigantic grain of salt, you know, it's like table. But what made sense to me was a guy I was listening to last night that was talking about how, you know, flattening the curve is a good idea in some ways because it keeps the medical system from being overwhelmed, which is, of course, you know, the purpose of it.
Yeah.
But when you flatten the curve, you also widen it. So instead of this being, you know, like a typical kind of flu that will, you know, generally go through the population in about 2 weeks, you know, we're making this thing drag on for months on end. So don't know what the solution is here, but
yeah. So anyway, though, let's focus on what we can control, which is what we can do inside on our own. And if you are lucky enough to live with somebody, things you can do possibly with a partner. So, like, obviously there is shadow striking, shadow boxing stuff, right?
Yep.
And yeah, if you have pads, that's great, because now you have something that you can kind of hit for feedback to a certain extent.
You got obviously, somebody to hold them.
Yeah. Obviously, it's not the same as what we're used to, but at least it's better than nothing, and there's things that you can keep sharp. There is any sort of, you know, exercise stuff that you might have, body weight exercises. And if you do have a partner or a dummy or something like that, again, figuring out moves that you can do with them that are things that are easy to teach to that person or partner.
Yeah, those of you guys that live somewhere, the strikers out there, live somewhere where you can hang a heavy bag, I'm envious of your position right now. I'm in a tiny little apartment, and that's not an option for me. But yeah, to be, you know, it's the thing about, I train solo all the time, you know, in my school before. I teach mostly kids. So I do have some older students that I also train with in the evenings. But, you know, my typical routine before all of this is I get to the school early and I put in, you know, between 30 and 60 minutes of training every day before my classes start. And it was all solo stuff. But, you know, in my school, I got a heavy bag, you know, I have a couple different freestanding targets. I have weights and a bench and stuff like that. So right now, you know, training equipment that I'm using is a single focus mitt. Got to go back to my school and grab a second one. So I'm trying to teach my girlfriend how to hold pads, but we got to go very, very slow with that. It's a problem. But I got a single focus mitt and two kettlebells that I've been using. And, you know, to tell you the truth, like it helps you to understand that, like, you can do a lot with very little equipment. Honestly, yeah. You know, it's like if you're motivated and you want to work out and stay active during this time, and I think that's very good for, you know, people mentally, especially, you know, to stay busy. You're not just cooped up at home on the couch watching Netflix all day. You know, I think that, yeah, you can do a lot, even without the kettlebells, even just body weight exercises. You can do a good amount of training. No problem.
Yeah. Well, with jiu-jitsu, there's a good amount of people that also, John Donahair, who's one of the most famous jiu-jitsu instructors in the world, he put out a free solo drills DVD that's available through BJJFanatics.com, which you guys can find, which is a good tool of different things you can just do that's grappling related solo. But one of the things that I think is understated is just, yeah, if there's so much free stuff that you can just watch, period. Take advantage of those things and just watch instructionals. There's tons of evidence through studies that show that visualization and visual learning has a huge, 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 huge impact.
Sure.
I remember reading some sort of free throw study. So basketball study, just shooting from the free throw line, where they showed that they had some people go and take a specific number of shots every day. And then they had some people just do mental exercises where they visualize the act of shooting and hitting the shots and making the shots. And I remember that that article came to the conclusion that the actual physical numbers of the percentage of the shots getting hit weren't that different.
Yeah.
From the mental reps versus the people doing the physical reps. So don't kind of undersell, like, studying and doing the mental reps, you know?
Yeah, I've heard of that. I've heard of that study specifically referenced before, I think, by Ian Abernethy. I think I've heard him talk about that one before. And it's interesting, actually, to talk a little bit of striking versus grappling here. I should be important to state, though, that the karate isn't really just a striking art. You know, I think it's typically practiced that way today.
Yeah.
But if you look at the meanings behind a lot of the movements found in kata, there's a lot of grappling that's found in it. So, you know, I wonder, you know, from a grappling background, you know, what you think about solo. You know, it's actually funny because I've done, you know, a little bit of training with you and your teacher, Alberto. And, you know, like, you guys would demonstrate sometimes the moves solo.
Yeah, we do that a lot in class. Of teaching. Yeah,
but do you
think
there's, like, value in making that just part of your practice?
I think there's some good benefits out of that. I think it makes some of these standard core movements more smooth, and that in relation just helps, period. Like, and it doesn't have to be like, I know what you're talking about, where we like almost show the whole like move solo. But yeah, I think there's a huge benefit to that, but that might be a little too much, I think, for the general person. That's very specific because it only works with some moves.
Yeah.
But right. I think just like the basic core movements that make up jiu-jitsu, getting those extra reps in are just going to help. So like, you know, doing like a what's called a knee shoulder get up, where you practice getting up with your hips high on your knee and shoulder.
Yeah.
That's like a movement that you do in so many different moves. So just drill that, you know, drilling sit outs. Again, that can help. Shrimping.
Yeah.
Just doing a ton of squats because you stand up, do like a technical stand up by yourself, squatting and then go back down. All that stuff can help.
Mm-hmm.
You know, yeah, I mean, like it's just. What,
you need mats though, I guess, to do.
To a certain extent, I mean, like I got hardwood floors right now and like I could shoot a double leg takedown on here. I just have to be aware.
Yeah.
Same thing, I could do a break fall. Now, I obviously live in an apartment too, so like.
Yeah.
My neighbor downstairs might not like it if I'm doing break falls, but yeah. Like the thing is that the benefit of doing a break fall on my hardwood floor is that I'm going to really go through the movement smart and intelligent and break it down so I can land safely.
Sure.
And not realistic. Get hurt. So I do think there's a ton of benefits in that. Same thing, shooting your double leg takedown. You're going to make sure that when you practice it, when you put your knee on the ground, you're going to put it down very gently, because if you don't, you're going to smash your knee up on floor. You know, it's a little easier, I think, if you have carpeted floors, but even still, that doesn't give you like a ton of padding and protection.
Yeah.
What
about any of the standing stuff though? Because, you know, and again, it's because visualization is supposed to be a part of kata, you know, part of and it's an interesting thing to think about, because so often applications aren't really practiced for the forms for the kata that you're doing. Yeah. So it's like, what are you supposed to visualize when, or sometimes, you know, the applications that are practiced are a little bit ridiculous and impractical, but you know, it's like, I don't see any reason why you couldn't do something similar with, you know, more strictly grappling arts. It's just, you know, coming up with sequences of routine, like, you know, sequences of movements that flow logically from one to another, and just practicing the basic movements as you would do them, but without a partner.
Yeah, again, I think it's very specific though to certain moves with jiu-jitsu. That's the problem. Is that like you're gonna end up right off the bat, you're probably eliminating at least like 75% of the moves.
Yeah,
maybe even more. Like, but again, it is what it is right now. Like,
sure.
I've seen some people doing some creative things. I've seen them putting pillows in like the body of the gi top, and then making the limbs of the gi top out of towels, towels in the legs and towels in the arms. And then they have a little homemade dummy.
Yeah. That's cool.
Yeah. And that's stuff that you can just find online. So like they're just stacking pillows together. They're putting it in the gi,
tie it all up,
tying it with a belt. Yeah. And then they're stuffing towels as the arms and legs, and they're just working off that. And they have a little dummy.
Yeah. Have you ever used your grappling dummies before?
I have.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I definitely think that there's something to be said about it. Like, the thing is that I've always been in a situation where I pretty much trained enough hours out of the day. Sometimes maybe even too much, you know, so it's like...
Sure.
Where I didn't, like, it's kind of like when I was like, because, you know, it's a job, so I'm like, oh, when I'm done... Unless I'm fully training with like a group of people where I know I'm gonna like be training just to train, I kind of am like, I'm not gonna do any more jiu-jitsu for the day, sort of thing.
Mm-hmm.
But I see benefits of it. Like, you could just drill like a ton of neon belly drills and arm bars and mount transitions, something from the guard, you know, and it's definitely gonna make you better.
Yeah,
that'll but just even keep even dummy's limited too, you know. It's everything has its limits. The important thing is just to keep with it right now.
Sure, man. I mean, listen, at the end of the day, I don't remember the last time I think I told you earlier how it's like these last couple of weeks have kind of reminded me of, like, not even my teenage years, but when I was younger than that. Like, sometimes, like, summer vacation. Remember, like, those, like, dog days of summer. Like, those long, lazy summer days when you're just at home, like, playing video games with your siblings all day and stuff like that. Yeah. Like, it's been so long since I've just had so little to do every day. And I think that's one of the reasons why I've tried to be kind of disciplined about just every day doing, you know, I don't go crazy with training. Cause again, I'm kind of limited as to what my training options are, but I'm doing like 20 or 30 minutes every day.
Yeah.
I'm doing work, you know, enough that you get a good sweat going, you know, like you get some work done, get those endorphins flowing. You feel better, you know, you'll feel better once you're done the whole thing, but just like it fills up my day a little bit to have it in there. And I'm still teaching though, because again, the striking being a little bit easier, like, I can still teach forms, so I've been doing that. But that's, I think, the biggest thing, that it's like, you know, there's big, there's a, it's a very, it's not an ideal situation for anyone in martial arts community right now, the way that, that you might be able to continue your training. But, you know, like, you need things to do every day. And I think that would, it's better than nothing, even if you're very limited.
Yeah, yeah.
And what you can do. There's general fitness, there's some martial arts specific stuff, you know, the striking, you know, obviously, you know, you can just do like shadow boxing type stuff, or in karate, what we would call more like fighting drills or kata. But grappling, I don't know, you're making me think about how a homemade grappling dummy, just stuffing.
Yeah, I mean, you can order, you can buy grappling dummies too, obviously, you know.
I looked into one actually, but it was They're a lot of them are sold out.
Yeah, right, probably. Now. At this point. Yeah, but yeah, like so. If you have one, that changes things. But yeah, I personally, I think, in my opinion, the big things to do right now are, because honestly, there are some things you can do on a grappling dummy that you can't do solo stuff. But mm-hmm. You know, if you have the access to a grappling dummy, practice the moves you can with the grappling dummy. If you don't, try and make your own dummy. Practice the moves you can on that. If you can't, practice the moves that you can solo drill.
Yeah. Imagine there's like, you know, a lot of the big motions that you would do. I'm thinking grappling specifically here. I feel like those might be easier to do solo. But I think a lot of like, you know, this, because this, like, jiu-jitsu is extremely technical. I mean, there's a lot of like, and this, I'm total novice here, but there's a lot of like very small things that you're doing, you know, like they make the totality of the technique that you're practicing. I feel like I can imagine just starting from your knees, and again, striking background, maybe throwing some punches and then spinning and dropping down like you're doing an arm bar, just being like a little solo drill that you could do.
I would go some more simple than that. I would do things like maybe be on my knees and transition to what people call the technical mount. Mm-hmm. Some people, it's different names, but let's call it the technical mount. Some people call it the S mount. Some people call it modified mount. Mm-hmm. I think for the most part, people call it technical mount, but you could just do that and then go back down to your knees and just do a transition like that. You can go from your back to switching up to your knees. Eventually, if you know how to do it, you could actually do a full rotation in a circle where your hips come up and you just pivot off your shoulders and kind of the side of your shoulders and front and back of your shoulders and just spin in circles. You can do sit outs. Mm-hmm. You can do squatting because there's so many different squats. You can kind of do like a staggered stance sort of thing, which is kind of what would be like the knee slice position sort of thing. Lower yourself gently, put your knee on the ground, come back up. You could do what's called an X pass very easily, where you kind of kick the leg back as you're bowing forward, and then you catch yourself with that kicking leg, which is also a sotogari. So, yeah. Like, there's things you can do for sure. Double leg takedown. You can do from the double leg takedown, cutting the corner when you put your knee down and just pivot off the knee so you start to understand, hey, everything is light. I'm pivoting off the knee. So there's tons of different things. Shrimping, I don't think I mentioned. Sure. Bridging. I would focus more on that. I'd focus a lot, again, on the mental stuff. Mm-hmm. I would do calisthenics, sure. You know, push-ups, squatting. If you have kettlebells or access to a home gym, of course, obviously that's better, but like,
yeah, kettlebells crawling are a pretty good option too, because I feel like you can do a lot with just, I got a 20 and a 30 pound kettlebell. Yeah, I got one, you know, over there. Yeah.
That I have, you know. So.
Instead of a big set of weights, you know, it's
just that. Yeah, you know, and again, if you're comfortable with going outside or you have the ability to go outside,
got a yard,
you could just do farmer walks or press the kettlebell up over your head and walk around until you get tired, switch arms, do it with the other arm.
Sure.
But yeah, I think that's important because right now it's easy to kind of let mental fatigue, depression, laziness sink in when with everything that's going on right now.
Sure.
And I mean, we hopefully all of us can come out of this ready to go, stronger than before, you know.
It's going to feel great when we're all stepping out of our doors and going back to our normal lives again.
Yeah.
That's for sure. Something else actually that I just thought of was that you ever seen the drills the judo guys do with the with like elastic bands for takedowns? Like
yeah,
that's a pretty cool solo grappling.
Yeah, if you have access to that. You know.
I've done, you know, because I've done TheraBands just for rehab for my shoulders before. And sometimes the ones, you just put them in a door frame.
Yeah.
Connects with like a hook from the top. And you might rip your door off the hinges, actually. I think it's not really created for that.
Sprawling,
yeah.
Like wrestlers. Wrestlers, it's pretty common to like the equivalent of shadow boxing in wrestling.
Sure.
I just think that for some reason that it's not as popular, I think, in jiu-jitsu, but it's a great thing. Like, they kind of just like, they'll like have quick feet and a good wrestling stance, and they'll go from like shooting and sprawling just solo.
Yeah.
You know, those are all things that we can all do, you know? Yeah. And again, like, it sucks the situation we're in, but the beauty of it is that almost every person at this day and age has access to the internet. So just start Googling and YouTubing and being like, hey, solo drills, solo grappling drills. And if you're a grappler, hey, right now might be a good time to start working on your striking.
Sure.
Right now's a great time, you know? Find videos where you can learn how to throw a basic punch, how to throw a basic kick, how to throw a knee, how to throw an elbow.
Oh, yeah.
You know, like
perfect time to just learn basic, like, jab, cross. You definitely, you know, that's the kind of thing I think that somebody with zero striking experience, you know, you could learn the basics of how to throw those two straight punches. You know, it's like not, but you start slow and you just build it, and you know, build it slowly.
If you're a striker, right now is the perfect time to learn how to sprawl.
Absolutely.
So like you can find tons of videos on, hey, this is how you do a sprawl, and start adding it in, and then now you're going to start to come out of it with, yeah, again, you haven't gotten the live feedback of what it feels like to do it with another person.
Yeah.
If you're a grappler learning striking or you're a striker learning how to sprawl, but you're going to be better at it than you were before. And then you can start to get the live feedback of training with a person once this is all, you know, over with and we're able to do that.
It actually adds a lot to like a shadow boxing workout too, if you start throwing sprawls in there. So it makes it a lot more physically demanding. I've done it a little bit. Probably don't really know how to sprawl correctly, but that's the other thing about the shadow box, and this has a little bit to do with how much space you have to work with in terms of adding kicks to it too. Sprawl is going to require a good amount of space as well.
Yeah, but I think everybody has the room for a sprawl. I don't foresee that really being a problem.
Yeah, there's a couple of my students. These kids trying to train in their bedrooms. Yeah, like, man, you're gonna break your foot trying to kick.
Just be aware of, you know, what's going on around you. You know, where you're at. But all that's good, because in real life, like one of the things that I've always done in training, and my instructors always preached in training, is that, like, if you're training and you crash into another group of people training, that is somebody's friend coming after you in real life and stomping you in the head.
Yeah.
If you crash into the wall, that's the wall in real life. Yep. So you should have been more aware and figure out a way to avoid the wall.
Yeah.
That's a wall in real life, and then you'd have to fight off of the wall, or that's a person's friend.
Yeah.
And you need to have your head on sort of a swivel and understand what's going on around you. So same thing. Again, these are things that we can use and take advantage of. Hey, I've got limited space.
Sure.
Well, what if I got attacked in a bedroom? Somebody isolated me and they tried to attack me in a bedroom. and they go to tackle me. That might happen. Well, how do I sprawl out of that situation? Because you might have to.
It's crazy how much close quarters make a difference too. There's a video that I saw a while back that was this guy's a bare knuckle boxer. I forget his name, but he was kind of like, you know, kind of a bare knuckle boxing leagues are still kind of smaller, but he's one of the top guys in one of those organizations. But it was a video of him getting into a fist fight with two dudes in a bathroom, and he like ended up getting like pushed into a stall in there, and everybody was like, why didn't he knock these guys out? This guy's a really good boxer. It's like, when you don't, like, he didn't have any space to throw, like, he threw some punches, but when you don't have space to like move correctly, you don't generate the power for a good shot. It makes a huge difference being in tight like that.
On the flip side of that, there's a guy named Jason Knight who used to fight in the UFC and does bare knuckle boxing, and he got attacked in a bathroom by two guys and he knocked them both out. He was at like a bar and he got attacked. He knocked them both out.
You know, but that might actually, I think that might have been the guy. Thinking about the clip that I saw, it was a short clip. I didn't see anybody get knocked out.
The video may have been longer.
Yeah,
he wouldn't be the first. Supposedly, something like happened to George Masvidal too.
Yeah, well, specifically,
he got into something supposedly, and I think it was Chael Sonnen was talking about this, where he was like, he was out with Masvidal, and Masvidal got into a fight, and he walks out of the bathroom. He's like, dude, I just knocked out two guys in the bathroom. We got to get out of there. I could have my stories kind of
mixed together. Yeah.
But, I mean, honestly, though, that's kind of the equalizing force of grappling when it's one-on-one against a striker, is that if you put the striker on their back and you're on top holding them down, you've created the same scenario of a close-quarters combat situation where they can't move the arm back or the leg back properly to generate the force for it to be a damaging blow.
Yeah.
You know, so again,
you see that in UFC, even, or I'm sorry, the MMA in general, just because if you get your back up against the cage, right? You know, it's like how often you see knockout shots of the guys pinned up against the cage. It's like you can't really.
Lots of times when it does happen, they kick off the cage to try and generate some force because you can't just generate it the way you're used to. But again, these are things now that you can practice. And like, if you're a striker that maybe hasn't worked on knees and elbows in close quarters, well, now is the time to do it. You can shadow box those things, add those techniques.
Yep.
I think that that's right now, you know, that's the thing to do. In jiu-jitsu, there's a ton of free companies that release instructionals that have given away free instructionals or are giving away free instructionals. So, you know, you guys can hopefully find those and kind of just stay mentally sharp and do what you can physically as well.
I'm sure there's a lot of dudes out there trying to convince their girlfriends to start training with them now.
If you do have access to somebody, you know. I live alone, so I don't have access to anybody. You know, but like if you do live with somebody, train.
Yeah.
Grab them and start training. Like, teach them. And you don't, even if they don't have interest, it's like, hey, can I show you something and you just do this and I'm going to react this way? And just make sure you keep them safe as well, so then they want to keep doing it with you. You know, don't slap on an arm bar and put pressure on their elbow and then they're like, ow, that hurts, I don't want to train with you anymore, you know?
Yep.
We should be careful with our training partners anyway, but now we have to be extra careful with our training partners because most of us are, if we have somebody to train with, they aren't somebody who's ever trained before.
Sure. And also it's worth noting that this is a bad time, not only for anyone with the coronavirus, but just a bad time to have to go to the hospital in general. You know, you kind of do your part to keep the medical system from getting overwhelmed by also not having the dumb training injuries.
I will say this, and this is kind of, I guess, the last part of the conversation for today. But if you have injuries or you've been a little banged up, the beauty of all this is that you're probably feeling better than you felt in a long time, and you've actually taken the time to heal. I did not have any injuries, but my body was a little more beat up than I think I realized.
Yeah.
And I feel lots of things that I hadn't really noticed until now that I've taken an extended break from training, where I'm like, oh man, I did have something that was sore and a little beat up. Yeah. And I wasn't, luckily I didn't get injured from it, but maybe I would have if I kept going with it. And now these things are all healed up and ready to go. And when it's time to go back, now I'm like, okay, so maybe I need to be a little bit more aware of how I'm training, because, and what is tender, what is sore. Maybe something is and I'm not paying attention and realizing it because it's just kind of been achy and or sore for so long that I didn't even realize it was achy or sore.
Sure.
Or tight or and all these things. So, you know, like, yeah, this is a good time to really focus on getting healthy, focus on doing things that'll keep you healthy and strong for a while, which is lots of times, honestly, most of us, our physical activity is the training. We don't do the other stuff that's going to keep us healthy and able to train,
yeah,
our martial arts, our sports even longer.
Yeah, no, that's something we've talked about before on this podcast, you know, about recovery.
Yeah.
Recovery is often something that is a tricky part of your training to kind of be deliberate about.
Yeah.
With it too, that it's fine. Again, I've never quite got it down, but I know that I always felt, and it's a little bit more of an extended break, but like, I remember when I was going to a lot of karate tournaments, and like competing really consistently a couple of years back, that it was when I had like a solid, like a 4-day weekend.
Yeah.
You know, like I had like a solid, like 3 or 4 days where I didn't train at all, or I trained very lightly. When I would come back, I would feel so sharp.
Yeah.
Like that too. So yeah, at the very least, definitely giving everybody a chance to really rest. I mean, I'm sure a lot of people, you know, I've actually heard a couple of people say how it's like been a relief not working, because you're spending a lot more time with your kids, a lot more time with your wife, girlfriend, just family in general. So, you know, it's not all bad. Sometimes life slowing down a bit. And us all having a lot of free time on our hands.
Yeah, I agree.
All right, guys, maybe, you know, something else we didn't get to today and maybe we could do in a separate episode later this week is a little bit about how this has all impacted martial arts businesses. You know, it's kind of a big topic to get into. But I personally have been teaching online. I know you said you've been recording some videos with your boss.
And, yeah.
You know, doing stuff like that. So we'll leave that one for next time, though. Thanks for listening, everybody.
Take care, guys.
Keep training.